Hello, and welcome back to the Vital Masculinity Podcast. This week, we wrap up the main part of our series on the differences between men and women with an episode on exterior roles. So the past 2 weeks, we had two episodes, on interior or familial roles, the roles that men and women have within their own families. And now we're going to talk about roles that men and women have out in society. Now this topic has the potential to ruffle some people's feathers, but pay attention because I think this is very important for our understanding of the differences between men and women. And if you're not satisfied, stay tuned because in a couple weeks, we'll have some episodes coming out on feminism and related masculine-type reactions to feminism. So with that, let's get on with this week's episode on exterior gender roles.
Hello, gentlemen, and welcome to the Vital Masculinity Podcast. I am your host, Stephen Sloyer, and joining me in the co-host chair, as always, is Brian Murphy. How you doing today, sir?
I'm doing pretty well. This is week, I don't even know what week it is now, but still in the house, and it's pretty cold out. It's been in the 30s and 40s, so I'm looking forward to, I guess, summer. I guess we just skip spring here in New York, but I'm looking to at least get outside, you know, now that we're working from home permanently. But
I should put a countdown timer, or maybe not a countdown, but a count up timer, just a timer on our website to show how long we've been in quarantine, because I've totally lost it. I'm pretty sure for me it's week 11 or 12, and it's been interesting. You know, I know we've had two episodes, one of our debriefs and our Enduring Calamity Through Virtue, where we've discussed the kind of practical implications of being locked inside, although that was, you know, I think the last time we recorded one of those was maybe a month and a half ago. I feel like it was late March that we did our Enduring Calamity Through Virtue. So a lot has changed, and it's interesting, you know, seeing the effects that it's had on our lives. In so many ways, you know, you and I have discussed how it makes us read more. We've done a lot more writing. Heck, we launched this journal, which was, gosh, a month and a half ago at this point, too. So it's interesting to see how this has actually been a catalyst for the project to evolve as well, as we finish up this series and have done a lot of planning and road mapping for the next, not just one series, but next couple of series to help all you dear listeners become better men.
Yeah, actually, this is my perspective has definitely changed, so I feel like that's something we should talk about in our next debrief episode, kind of see where we're at, I guess, in a few weeks.
Yeah, I am certainly down for that. But today, before we get to the topic, I just want to give a couple of announcements at the beginning of this show. We have two brand new things, one that is temporary and one that is permanent. The permanent one is that we now have a newsletter. So if you would like to subscribe to the newsletter, you can either get a notification whenever we publish a new blog post or article or essay, or you can sign up for our Monday morning debrief, which is basically just a once a week nice summary of all of our episodes and podcasts that we have released in the previous week. It's a really good way to start off your week and get some good content that'll make you think and hopefully set your week up on a little better foot. Now, the temporary thing I mentioned, because we are recording this in the second week of May, is that we currently have a giveaway for a wonderful, wonderful book, a modern classic, How to Be Unlucky, which is a reflection on the pursuit of virtue by Joshua Gibbs of the Searcy Institute. And you can enter, there's a couple of ways to enter, but you can enter to win this, and the giveaway closes at the end of May. So we'll put a link in the description below, but we definitely want you to enter that because we think that all of you listeners should read the book. I don't know if you've read it, Brian. I've read it multiple times. It's fantastic.
It's on my list, but my list is very long, so
I feel like that describes a lot of the people that are listening as well. But today, that's enough for the announcements. Let's get to the show. And we are going to be talking about roles of masculinity again. And Brian, you want to give us a little bit of a kickstart to this episode and how it differs from the previous two?
Yeah, so last time, we called it early roles, I guess, of masculinity. And we talked a lot about being a son or you know, how that contrasts being a daughter, being a brother, and what it looks like to be a sister. Obviously, most men are not going to be sisters. In fact, hopefully no men are going to be sisters.
That's just impossible, Brian.
Yeah. I mean, it's 2020. You never know, but I think that's kind of ridiculous. So anyways, moving on from that, that's a different topic. So this week we're talking about, I guess we also talked about being a husband and wife and being a father and a mother. So this week we are talking about roles that I guess you could call outside the family. And these are, I think it's interesting because we tend to think of these roles as like, oh, well, what do you want to do when you grow up? Oh, well, I want to be a fireman, or I want to be a police officer, or I want to be a lawyer. And it's kind of like we think of these roles as the primary roles, but in reality, they're actually, and I think that we should consider them secondary. They should be an extension. They should flow out of the familial roles that we talked about in the past two episodes.
And I think that's actually a very good way to put it. If you think a lot about, you know, yourself maybe, or maybe someone you know, or even just kind of an archetype of maybe say an office worker, it's very easy to see how these extensions, and we'll talk about them, but just to kind of give the brief synopses, we have the warrior, what we're calling the business leader, and then the priest. And it's very easy to see how failures in these primary roles, whether as son, as father, as husband, as brother, as these things, can have a direct impact, which can be very detrimental to being a warrior, being a, you know, business leader or entrepreneur, or being someone that's in a sacrificial role like the priest. And that's kind of why we're having this primary-secondary dichotomy. Again, you know, there's no really clear, like, tree that says that you have to start here and you have to follow this path in life, unfortunately. And that's what makes life both beautiful but also challenging. So whenever we're talking about these roles, again, you know, everybody's path is going to be different. But nevertheless, you're going to see these similarities in your paths. And this is why it's still important to do things like pursue virtue, pursue excellence in these roles, even if your path is, you know, different than Brian's or my own path.
I think one reason we need to focus on and why these are secondary and not something that should be the whole focus of your life is because you just think about it. I'm born, I am automatically a son. There's nothing that can change that. It's not like I can be fired from being a son. I mean, I guess I could, you know, the relationship could break down or something like that, but it's not going to change the fact that I'm a son, that I'm a brother. So those are things that are fundamental. These things kind of flow from that. And I want to say that they serve the familial roles. They serve your role as a son, as a father, as a husband. I mean, if you look at the warrior, he goes out and he fights for his homeland. He's fighting for what he loves, to protect what he loves, to protect his family, to protect his community, his country. These are all things that he's not just doing it just for the sake of it. I mean, I guess a mercenary could do that, but that's not really the typical idea of what a good warrior looks like. Same thing with a business leader and a priest. Like, they're doing these things for their family, for their community. They're, you know, providing and leading in these ways so that they can provide for their family and lead their family.
And, you know, we have a topic that you and I have thrown on, Brian, called economic man. And this is really, I think, one of the reasons why maybe this self-sacrificial behavior or even just mindset isn't exactly as common today as it may have been in the past, or maybe as, you know, you and I would like it to be. And a lot of this whole economic man, and it's not just about, you know, the business leader archetype, it's really about kind of just the concept of work and identity in general. You know, a lot of people nowadays, they will find themselves through their work, and they will be guided by the question, what do you want to be when you grow up? And Brian, I would say, you know, you and I are probably in the same boat as well. I can't speak for you, but I know that if someone just on the street comes up to me and says, you know, tell me about yourself, I guarantee 99 times out of 10, the first thing I'll say is, well, you know, I'm a CPA and, you know, all of these sorts of things. And it's just something that's been ingrained in me, even if I don't find my primary joy through doing taxes as compared to, you know, this podcast, spending time with my family, exercise, and other areas of life that are much more primary.
That's one thing that I think is really drilled into you in school. Well, at least government schools. I don't call them public schools because they're run by the government. So, yeah, it's the whole way that we're raising our children is to think about how do you this whole education, this whole process, this going to college, the whole reason for that is to figure out what type of job you want to work and, you know, who you want to be. And I think we need to kind of separate those things a little bit. I just think back to high school and, you know, the really important thing at the end of high school was figuring out where you wanted to go to college so you could get the job that you wanted to get. And, you know, I'm applying for colleges. I'm like 16, 17. And you're like, what do you want to do for the rest of your life? And I'm like, I have no idea. I don't know. Like, I guess I like working with computers. I guess that's what I'll do. And I think the trouble was that is thinking of your whole life based on just the job you do. What happens when you lose your job? What happens to your identity when you get laid off or maybe even your job becomes obsolete? You know, does that somehow destroy who you are? And I think that's it's a real problem. And I think it causes a lot of confusion for men because they look for their identity in the work that they do, which is can be a problem, like I said.
And this is a funny thing in kind of a twisted way, but you think back to the concentration camp Auschwitz, where they had on the gates Arbeit macht frei, which is work sets you free. And I think ironically, so many people nowadays see that as the case. You know, I work at a big, you know, company, and we deal a lot with people that are from New York City, from Chicago, from Los Angeles and stuff. Whenever they come in, whenever I talk to them, you see this mindset, which it certainly exists, you know, in little Raleigh, North Carolina, but it's basically like what we have on steroids, where so many people try to seek fulfillment in their careers and their entire life revolves around their work. They move to these cities because of, you know, the job they have or what they want to do. Or, you know, you have the classic example of people moving to Los Angeles to become actors or actresses. And I think so many people have it backwards. So many people will rest that they may work. Well, the true equation, the true formula is actually the other way around, where we work that we may have leisure. And we're going to do a couple of episodes, or maybe one episode, but I would probably say it's going to be a couple, on this concept of leisure, which another great book by Joseph Pieper is written about. But it's one of these things that I think, and I would wager a large amount of money that a lot of the anxiety and the depression and mental health issues that has arisen in our fast-paced urbanite world is a direct result of this very shackling mindset that work is the only thing that is your identity. Work is the thing that truly sets you free, as the Nazis so poetically put.
One thing that I think of is that there's a big focus on, you know, discover what you're passionate about, you know, find your dream job, do something that you love. And, you know, I enjoy my job, but I don't know. It's work. Like, it's even a job that you enjoy is still work, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to suck at times, and you're not going to enjoy it. And I don't know. There's this whole idea of having a job that you're passion that's like, ooh, this is great all the time, 24/7. I don't think that's realistic. I mean, maybe for some people exists, but I don't know anyone that actually has a job like that.
Right. And one of the things that you hear, a common phrase, is that people are putting their life on hold until they finish college, until they settle down. This is actually a very common phrase among women, where because they are the people that feel pressured because, you know, they're able to bear children, to try to balance that career and family route. And that's actually a really just false dichotomy, because our identity shouldn't be found in our work, whether we're working or whether we're staying at home with children. Excuse me. Our identity, you know, is found in so much more. And it's exactly like you were saying, Brian, we need to seek fulfilling work, but we only need to view it as one out of so many other responsibilities, duties, and really pleasures in life.
Yeah, one thing I would say is that we're not saying that don't work, because there's clearly a lot of men out there that, you know, they live in their parents' basement and they play video games all the time and they have no drive or anything like that. That's bad too. Like, be ambitious, be responsible, get a job. But don't make it your whole focus of who you are.
It's all about that balance again. We say it so many times, but I think whatever concept we're talking about, whatever really idea about how to live life, you're going to find this Aristotelian mean. It's never going to be found in the extremes, which is so attractive to so many people, and you just can't do it. And, you know, one of the things, going back to this whole economic man thing, is that we're going to talk about feminism, and we're going to do an episode in the future on this, and also talk about masculinity and toxic masculinity and all that stuff. But feminism tends to hold economic man up as the ideal, and that shouldn't be the case, whether for women or even for men. And, you know, most people don't have a career, they have a job, even though careers are job-like. And I think this is another thing that people tend to confuse. They tend to think of their job as all-consuming, and they tend to sacrifice everything else at the altar of the job. It's typically very prominently seen in women, obviously, with this whole family versus career thing. But so many people, and they're told this, you know, in college, especially as someone that went to a business school and has a degree in business and accounting, you see so many people that are lied to consistently and just every day, saying that they can have everything they want, and that if they, you know, just follow this route and give the school this much money, which is obviously one of the big caveats, then they're going to be able to be happy and have every single thing they want. They're going to be able to live in a nice suburban home and have one child and, you know, a dog and a cat, and there'll be a nice fenced in yard, and they'll have all the latest Amazon and Google products in their house, and a car that's a year or two old. And life is so much more complex than this. Life is not about trying to become, you know, just a cookie cutter representation of your next door neighbor. It's not even about competing with them, but it's about, as Jordan Peterson says in his 12 Rules for Life, you know, comparing yourself to your past self, working on getting better, and pursuing excellence in the means and ways that you're capable of doing.
This is a real frustration for me as a man that's dating, trying to find a wife. I have a lot to say about feminism. I do think that it has some reasonable critiques about modern men, but for the most part, I don't like it. In my experience, just thinking to the women that I've dated recently, and honestly, like, they're good women. I like them. They're good people. But this whole concept from feminism has just poisoned women, I think. And, you know, one of my ex-girlfriends, she wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. She wanted to have 12 kids, which, that's a lot of kids, but I don't know.
God bless her, yeah.
I'd be cool with that if it worked out. She was also a grad student in school, and like her father, you know, he pushing her to do this, to be a grad student. Like, how is this going to work out? Like, how, you know, you want to, you know, go to extended, you know, not just like an associate's degree or bachelor's degree, but I think she's going for a master's and or even a PhD. Like, how do you expect to have 12 children when and be a stay-at-home mom, and this is what you're doing? Like, you're racking up all this debt just to, I don't know, it doesn't make sense. And I think that, like, the one thing that Jordan Peterson talks about is that women have different interests for men. They make different choices. And this is kind of what you see with the whole wage gap thing. Like it's kind of a myth. Like women,
it's definitely a myth.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, women, they choose to, you know, take more part-time jobs. They choose to like maybe even give up their job when they get married, when they start having kids. And you know, they want to have kids. Like most women want to have children. If they don't, like that's fine. Like go start your career, whatever, like go do that. But if you want to have a family, if you want to, you know, be married to someone that has a high powered career, which I think most women do, like it doesn't work. It doesn't work. How can two people have, you know, their whole focus be their career and try to have a bunch of kids and, you know, want to have a really great family? It's like, you can't have all these things at once. It's just not realistic for men or for women, especially for women, because they're the ones having the children.
And this is, again, you know, I think it's a great example of a correlation, if not causation, for a lot of the mental health problems, a lot of the reasons behind divorce. It's because people are told that they can have everything they want and they never really question it. You know, your example of one of your ex-girlfriends and being in school and, you know, not picking on her or anything like that, but just kind of in general, when people tend to go through their first, not just 18 years, but 21, their 24, 27, 30 years of life in higher education, they kind of get a little heady. They kind of, you know, think a little too much, and they kind of realize, or they fail to realize, I should say, that the world isn't as utopian as maybe their, you know, their ideals think about. Because when you're constantly mired in ideals, sometimes you lose that aspect of practicality. Sometimes you lose track of time, particularly if you've spent your first two or three decades in education. That's something that's very abnormal for human development, you know, over the past centuries. Most people were not just working by, you know, the age of 20, but they were married and had children. And we did not evolve as a society to get to that point. So this is a very new concept. And just because something is new, obviously, doesn't mean it's better or worse. But I think so many people think because it is, quote unquote, liberating, you know, they're free to choose another master. And there's a great quote from G.K. Chesterton. There's a lot of great quotes from Chesterton. But it's the idea that feminism is mixed up with a muddled idea that women are free when they serve their employers, but slaves when they help their husbands. And this is, you know, an idea that's very common nowadays. It's the freedom to choose another master, but again, you're still a slave. It's like liberating yourself from, you know, actual bondage to choose slavery to your passions, almost in a sense, similar to like the prodigal son, not exactly, but similar to that biblical story. And these sorts of things are so common over and over again that we see this desire for freedoms and the freedoms to have the ability to do something as compared to freedoms, you know, from something.
So now that we've ranted a lot about feminism,
yeah, let's get to the content of the episode.
Yeah. Actually, there's a point that I want to touch on, but I think we can do that after this. But cool, so, man, as we mentioned, there's kind of three main roles for a man outside the home. And I think maybe we can touch on why it's mainly for men and not for women. But we'll get to that later. But so, yeah, as we mentioned, the warrior, the business leader, and the priest. So if we think about the warrior, that kind of just is an outflow of what we talked about in the previous episode about being a protector of your family, you know, protecting your wife. You know, if you're trying to protect your family, you know, maybe there's something going on in the community and you have to be a protector of your community. And then maybe something happens in your country and you have to be a protector of your country. So it kind of flows out of that, where the warrior is, you know, they're protecting, as the protector of the family, they go out and they defend. And this ties into also what we talked about, the differences between male and female biology. Men are just stronger and bigger and more, you know, they're able to fight better than most women. The majority of women, the vast majority. So, you know, you think you put an army of men up against an army of women, there's going to be no contest. You're just going to wipe the floor with them.
And not only do you have these physical differences, which Brian just mentioned, which are very self-explanatory, but you also have the self-explanatory and pretty obvious mental, emotional, psychological differences, whatever you want to call them. Men are a lot more aggressive, obviously. And that's another big one that, you know, men are going to be the ones to go out and take, you know, coordinated, concentrated action in order to prevent, you know, attacks on them in the future. So it's that level of thought process that really serves the male role of the warrior well. And another thing on a very societal role, and honestly, I think this is one of the ones people forget about a lot, but it's that men are typically more expendable than women. And it's not because men are worth less than women or women are worth less than men, but it's just because it's a lot easier for men to be away on campaign. Women, you know, when they get pregnant, and particularly over the centuries when that was one of their, you know, their primary duties in a sense, pregnancy, child rearing, being a mother, women are sidelined for 9 months and then, you know, even beyond that. And so they can't easily leave and, you know, go out on campaign, go out and protect the walls and man the guard posts. And not only that, but, you know, a man can, and this is a very biological, I don't exactly, you know, advocate for this, obviously, but, you know, a man can have, you know, can father children with many different women, while a woman, you know, is sidelined, like I mentioned, for those 9 months after, you know, having intercourse with one man. So that's another way to look at that, you know, kind of value proposition for the warrior. But getting off of that high horse, I think this role, again, is self-explanatory. Was there anything else that you wanted to discuss, Brian?
I was just thinking about your example, and I think one of the challenges today is that with technology, with medicine, specifically with contraception, it's very easy to not think of women in this way. And it's, you know, it's just unnatural. It's possible, like a woman can take contraception and not have to worry about having children, but it's not part of a woman's natural, what a woman is. I think that because we live in this environment with all this contraception, you know, with women, you know, not having to worry about having children, we've kind of lost focus on what and lost our understanding of what a woman is and what a woman looks like. And not to say that women are just there to make babies, but like in any natural circumstance, if a woman has sex with a man, she's probably going to get pregnant. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, assuming that she has a husband and someone who's going to provide for her and take care of her. But I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that? I just think that that's a challenge that we face in understanding this.
Yeah, a lot of the modern, I don't want to say modern contraceptives, but that kind of like mindset that a lot of people have is really an artificial introduction to the system of human relations. That sounds very heady, very idealistic, but that's very true. You know, at the end of the day, and whether you're talking about like chemical contraceptives in terms of, you know, like pills and stuff, or, you know, you're talking about like much more manual organic, ones like, you know, barrier methods and such, you know, at the end of the day, it's still an artificial thing. That doesn't necessarily mean that, artificial things are good or bad, but it's one of the things where at a very base human level, we're introducing something else into the system which has not previously been there, which is why I think you see a lot of religions that you know are forbidding of it in certain aspects or in totality. But contraceptive, I think, is another issue. I think that was a very good point to bring up too, because like you mentioned, so many people think about this nowadays through that lens that you know, fatherhood and motherhood isn't something that is necessarily normal or even easy, let alone desirable, unfortunately, but it's something that is kind of abnormal. And you need to go out of your way to have it because you need to, you know, remove these artificial barriers that have been put up.
Yeah. And that's a problem, because it's like we were talking about earlier in the episode. These roles are fundamental to who we are. Like it's fundamental and natural to a woman to have children. It's not natural to stop that from happening. I mean, it's certainly possible, and I'm not saying that it's necessarily wrong. Well, actually, as a Catholic, I would say it's necessarily wrong. But I mean, someone can make an argument that perhaps, I don't know if I'd agree with it, but you know, you can make an argument that maybe it's not wrong to stop that from happening. But it's at the very base level, it's natural for a woman to have children. It's not natural for them to stop that ability of having children. It's not fundamental to who they are.
And moving on to our next outside the home role with the business leader, and Brian and I have called this like in our show notes a couple of different things, like manager, entrepreneur. But when we're talking about business leader, we're really just talking about someone that is, I'll say, driving economic activity outside of the household. And the reasons why this is typically the man, and this again gets back to the episodes that we've mentioned before, that we've released before in this series, is that men are a lot more goal-oriented in their nature. They're also able to compartmentalize their tasks a lot better than women, which gets to that whole waffle versus noodle brain concept that we discussed before. They also have a tendency to be a little less chummy and can be a little more efficient. And, you know, efficiency can be a very bad word, but at the end of the day, I think there is a golden mean between, you know, complete artificial efficiency and, you know, just complete natural chaos in a certain way. And they're also a little more likely to take risks and push the envelope. And realistically, you know, getting back to the whole warrior thing, it's a little bit easier for men to be outside the home and directing this economic activity as compared to women who, you know, maybe sidelined for 9 months. They have to, you know, raise children and their bodies, you know, are being served in that way. So things like that all kind of tend to why men were primarily the ones outside the home doing this.
And if you think about the other roles we were talking about, you know, a business leader is providing for his family, providing for his community, but most importantly, his family. And it's, I don't know. I don't think there's much else to say about that.
Now, I have a question for you, Brian. One of the things, and I hate hustle culture. I absolutely despise a lot of the entrepreneurial things you'll find on social media. I think it's silly. I think they're stupid. I think, you know, there are more of these lies that are being sold that you can have everything you want, like we mentioned. But when we say business leader or manager or entrepreneur, are you and I saying that every man out here needs to not only aspire to, but actively try to achieve being their own, you know, CEO, like so many people try to say?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think it's realistic. If you just listen to Jordan Peterson's advice, you know, it was advice for young women on choosing a career. But the one point he makes is that it's difficult to have a high-end career, period, he says. And it's nearly impossible to, like, most people are not going to have a high-end career. It's just most people aren't, he even says most people aren't even going to have a career. They're going to have a job. Like, you know, just look at the way that businesses are organized. Like, there's only one CEO, usually. I mean, that's what I would advocate for, one CEO, like having one person that's responsible. You know, there's other people that do just a job. They're not their own boss. And that's okay. Work hard, work your way up the ladder if it makes sense for you and your family, but that's not the end all and be all of working. The main point here is that, you know, do you have a job that you can provide for your family? It's not, do I have a business that I own for myself and, you know, I'm my own boss and I decide what I want to do. Like, I think that men are better at that, and most cases you'll see men who are managers and the primary leaders of a business, but not every man is going to be in that position, and that's okay. That's not a bad thing.
Right. And you know, one of the reasons why I hate the hustle culture, this be your own CEO culture so much, is because it is so selfish. While you view all of these three roles we're talking about now, they're all about serving your family, serving your community, you know, serving your brothers, your brotherhood, really just providing goods to those people that are nearest to you in a way that is prudent, that's pragmatic, and that kind of fits your natural needs. People that are a part of this be your own CEO culture and, you know, making a lot of money, you look at what they're focused on, even if they say otherwise, but they're focused on, you know, having really nice cars and really big homes and, you know, and all of these other things, which are much more about pleasure and the fruits of the labor for themselves as compared to the fruits of the labor for other people. So business leader, I mean, that is kind of a misnomer, but at the end of the day, we couldn't really think of any other word. I think, you know, it's a little more than just like worker or, you know, I don't know, worker bee, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, realizing that as men, we are kind of driven outside the home to, you know, trade, to interact, to produce, to build, to, you know, do all of these things for the benefit of our communities, for the benefit of our homes, not just because, you know, we can sell something, because we can sell a service, but because we're able to provide money for ourselves, for, you know, our families, our neighbors. Those are the real reasons why it's such an important role. And these are the things, these are the mindsets that you should have when you are, you know, like if you're in college now and you're gonna be entering the workforce, try to think about that when you are doing your job. You'll be a lot less likely to view it as a career, and you'll be a lot less likely, therefore, to have a healthy balance about your job, your other aspects of life, and your identity as a whole.
Yeah, I think Stephen and I have listened to these, you know, type of business podcasts or whatever, and they have some good tips, and, you know, go ahead and listen to it. But their whole mindset, well, maybe not their whole mindset, but their overarching mindset is what we're talking about. I think you can learn certain skills from them that are helpful, but don't make the whole focus like you're saying. One thing I was thinking about is that, you know, going back to feminism, I do think they make a good critique about the man who's, you know, working late and, you know, he doesn't come home to his family. You know, the man who's burning the midnight oil, the workaholic. I don't know, maybe they don't make that critique anymore, but it's a critique to be made, because I think it makes a good point that if you're working so hard that you don't have time for your family, that's a problem. You know, maybe there is a reason you're working really hard, because you're trying to provide for your family. But, you know, kids need a father. A wife needs a husband. And, you know, you should really think about balancing that and making sure that you're actually able to be with your family as much as you can be with them, while still providing. And I guess a point to that is that I think a lot of people think that they need to provide millions of toys for their kids. You know, they need to put them through college. And that's not what's most important. Like, obviously you don't want your kids to have lots of debt, but your kid's going to care more about you being around and being, you know, the present father rather than, you know, how much time you spend at work.
Right. And, you know, we can talk about materialism, and I'm sure we will in future episodes, but realistically, if you're listening to this podcast, we hope that you're trying to kind of break free from that consumerist mindset, where the things that are important are going to be your time. The things that are going to be important are going to be your presence, your leadership, you know, including your tacit leadership and not just you standing up and directing people. And one of the things, and this is really the priest role, the priest, you know, that has a very religious connotation, not only in the sense of like it's spiritual and it's something that transcends the body in a certain way, but it has this connotation that it's the person up, you know, in front of the altar, in a very big cathedral, and yada, yada, yada. And we're not saying that every man is called to being a priest, whatever religion you are. We're saying that every man has a sacrificial role to play. Every man is the father of his people. In the same way that, you know, the priest is the father of his flock, the father of the community, he has that fatherly role. He acts as a mediator and on behalf of others. And realistically, the priest is, in the family, is the designation, that role of the spiritual head, the person that is maybe not the glue that holds the family together, but the person that is the figurehead of the family, the person that if he suffers, then everyone else is going to suffer. So he's going to have to sacrifice for the benefit of other people so that, you know, they can experience good things in a way that, you know, maybe he didn't before in his life. So it's all about, this service to others that we've been stressing with these three roles that kind of grounds the priest in a very masculine manner.
The way I like to think about the priest, and maybe this is a little bit of a stretch, but in a certain way, the priest is kind of like a warrior and kind of like a leader, a business leader, at least in like the provider sense. Like the priest is providing, he's showing his family how to be generous. He's fighting for his family. He's showing them how to, he's acting on behalf of their family to make sure that they grow in virtue, that they are, provided for and cared for in a spiritual way, in addition to, all the other aspects. But I don't know. I was just thinking about this, like a warrior, a provider. There's a certain way that you can do that where it can be very self-centered, very selfish. And I think about, the sacrificial aspect of the priest, like a warrior, a true warrior, the warrior that you think about in the movies, the legends, the warrior who lays down his life to protect his friends, to protect his family. In a similar way, the type of business leader that you think about is the business leader who is willing to sacrifice. He's generous with his what he's earned from his work, and he gives that to other people, and he serves in that way. And I think kind of the priest really helps you balance these other aspects of what it looks like to be a man, because otherwise they can be very selfish. Actually, I did want to touch on one thing, because I know we talked a lot about feminism, and we're talking about these roles in the sense of men, filling out these roles. So I guess the question might be, well, can't women do these things as well? Like, clearly we see women in the military, women, working in CEOs. Like, is that? I guess what is your take on that?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question because, at the end of the day, we've talked about in these roles and in our previous episodes in this series about why men are more suited to certain professions than others. And that's not changed. Men are still much stronger than women. Men think certain ways, women think other ways. There's a lot of, strengths and weaknesses in both of the genders. Now, obviously, like you mentioned, you see a lot of this this appointment of women in positions that were typically male, and you don't really see, the opposite. And my response to that is not to say that there are women that are incapable, and it's not to say that these women are truly incapable of doing their jobs. I think if you were to do a comparison between men and women, maybe 4 times out of 5, 80% of the time, the men would do a little better role than the women, but there are still certainly women that are capable of doing jobs like being a CEO. That being said, I think a lot of this is, again, one of those artificial pushes, based on political ideology, kind of this much more economic equality, which views men and women as substitutes instead of complements to one another. And I think by pushing that, you see a lot of the, these differences get swept under the rug. A lot of these, maybe the weaknesses get swept under the rug because people want a woman to succeed so much. I mean, a great example of this is Elizabeth Holmes, who was, have you heard of Theranos, Brian?
No, I have not.
So Elizabeth Holmes was, it's weird to paint her a con artist, but basically she was supposed to be the next Steve Jobs. And everyone fawned over her because she was supposedly the female Steve Jobs, and she was a 19-year-old Stanford dropout that supposedly made this great company that was going to do a 200 tests with a single drop of blood in real time. It was like blood testing and stuff. And she only had like one or two classes on the subject in general and thought that she could go ahead and do this. Well, everybody fawned over her, and it went on for like, I want to say a decade or a decade and a half, because it was only recently, and I think they're only on trial now, but everyone is fawning over her, from Bill Clinton to like Jared Leto. Like, she spoke at all these high you know, high, big events with people in high places, and they were all fawning over her because she was the woman Steve Jobs. And yet it was a complete scam. The company didn't do anything. The company was, you know, using, like, putting their products when they would have a walkthrough with, like, Joe Biden one time. Then they would do the blood test on machines they bought from Siemens and other companies. So it was a complete scam. And I'm like, I'm not saying women are scammers, but it's one of those examples where you see people bending over backwards to elevate a woman unnecessarily, as compared to looking at the product, which is really what men are judged for as well. So this artificial elevation of women is not to say that some women are capable or some women are incapable, but it's just kind of the realization that people are putting women in places they were not historically, not necessarily because of merit, but because of things like affirmative action. And I think that's incorrect because it you know, denies a lot about you know, just truth and realities. And by telling women to that, you know, they're economic substitutes of men, and telling them that they can have a career and a family means that there's going to be a lot of heartache and, you know, depression and sadness later on when these biological urges for maybe motherhood do kick in 90% of cases. And they realize that the first 15 years out of college, they were throwing their life away or seeking things that maybe didn't make them happy or fulfilled.
One thing I think about fairly often, because I want to be a father someday, is like, how would I want to raise my children? How would I want to raise my daughters? And, you know, I think most fathers, you know, they want their daughters to be, grow up, be healthy, to be well-rounded, you know, to be successful and flourish. And, you know, maybe part of that is encouraging them to, you know, seek out a career. But, If that's what she wants, maybe she doesn't want to be a wife, doesn't want to have children. I don't think that's most women. Not in my experience. But I think, you know, it also, you know, the father has to be balanced in this as well. Like, recognize her talents, recognize what she desires. And, you know, if she wants to be a wife, you know, help her to build skills. If she wants to be a mother, help her build skills that, you know, go towards that, and not pushing her so hard to get a career when that's not going to help her, you know, what she truly desires. But I think that's the last thing we'll say on that. And we're sure we have a lot to say, you know, maybe perhaps on the feminism episode. I did have one last thought, though, because we talked a lot about, you know, how a father can be a warrior, a provider. I mean, you're married, but you're not a father yet. I'm not married. I'm single. And so one thing that I struggle with is, like, how can I appreciate and support family values, you know, being a quote unquote warrior, a business leader, a priest, when I don't have, you know, my own direct family that I can support? I guess, what are your thoughts on that?
That's a very interesting question, and I think there are a lot of men, young men nowadays, that are probably in the same boat as you. My thought is that you still live them out. There's a certain kind of mindset nowadays, and I think it's a lot more popular in urban centers where there's a lot of people and it's a little more maybe liberal in the gender roles and such, but there's a certain mindset that, you know, what you basically do is you have to kind of, you know, peacock in a certain way and act all outlandish and... But it's, you know, it's true. Act all outlandish to get the girl. And then, you know, you basically do a complete 180 once you're married and do the family values. And I think that's just incorrect. I mean, yes, there's unfortunately a lot of women nowadays that are going to be attracted by that, or attracted by, you know, things that
you don't
are
want
a little
those
less
women.
Than wholesome. Yeah, you know, you don't want a woman that is okay with one night stands and things like that. So yeah, it narrows the pool down, but it greatly increases the quality. The quantity goes down, the quality goes up. So if you are, you know, single out there, and this kind of harkens back to our dating episodes, I think it's still important to, you know, put into practice these family values that you, you know, so desire. And, you know, when we talk about family values, I think in many ways you're just talking about virtues. And it's like we've said before, you know, there's never a better time to start trying to be virtuous, to start trying to live out your values than now. Because you can't put your life on hold. You can't wait until you have X amount of money or X amount of children, or you have X amount of, you know, land or financial security or what have you. It's exactly like, you know, Boethius in Consolation of Philosophy. This man was doing well one day, and then fortune wheels turned, and, you know, he was implicated in conspiracy he was not actually a part of. He did not commit any ills, but he was executed. And, you know, everything was stripped of him, and it all happened in the blink of an eye. I mean, okay, we're probably not going to be committed in any conspiracies or anything like that nowadays. Hopefully not, at least.
Not yet.
But, yeah, not yet. when masculinity becomes illegal, God help us. But, yeah, so, like, you know, for all you know, this could be your last day on Earth. Memento mori is a really great practice. And I think that applies to the whole virtue and family values thing, is that do things that are meaningful to you. If you want to practice family values 10 years from now, then start practicing them now. If you, you know, want to have a family 10 years from now, you know, start putting yourself on the right path to doing that now. And it's really like the best way to live, I think. It is the most prudent, it's the most practical. And at the end of the day, you know, while it is slower and a lot less sexy than, you know, going the whole bureau CEO route and, you know, driving fast cars and things like that, it's going to leave you a lot more fulfilled.
I love it. I think that, you know, like you said, just focus on living out the roles that you are now. Like, be a good son. Be a good son to your father. Be a good son to your mother. You know, be a good brother, be a good big brother, you know, whether or not you have brothers or sisters, like find someone you can be a brother to. And I think even if you don't have your own children, you can be like a father figure, like as a big brother. And you can even like an uncle, you can, and those are opportunities I think that you can work on, and they will help you. I think when you get married eventually to, you know, have the skills that you need to put into practice at that point.
Yeah. Well, we certainly hope that these archetypes and rules and really just the discussion on what makes a man, like or a male or whatever you want to say over the past couple of episodes has given you guys some food for thought on, you know, what makes you different than women, why the genders are complementary as compared to just pure economic substitutes. And really what you can do nowadays to be a much more noble man, to, you know, be a man that is able to serve your family and your community better. We are going to get on to a couple of interludes next in our podcast series. And I think we'll let those be a little bit of a surprise, even though we've hinted at them before. And then after that, we're going to begin with some of the theological virtues, the three theological virtues, and begin what is, I believe, going to be a very large series on love and friendship. So with that being said, this is the Vital Masculinity Podcast. I am Stephen Sloyer with Brian Murphy. And we just wanted to thank you again for listening, for your support, and for all of the social interactions we've been having with you all lately. It's really a great feeling. But thank you again, gentlemen and ladies. And just always remember that virtue makes the man. Have a good one.